Well, on behalf of Father Carlos, the associate pastor here and at St. Mary's, and myself, Father Nathan, pastor here and St. Mary's, just want to extend to everybody here visiting a very Merry Christmas and best wishes and blessings for the evening and the sacred days ahead. So if you're visiting, it's so nice to have you here. And if you're a regular here, it's good to have you here too. So what a joy to gather at Christmas, it always is. I was thinking this morning, this is my 12th Christmas here with you in West Bend. And that means we've all gotten older together. So what can I say, right? But no matter what, no matter what age and circumstances, Christmas is a timeless thing as the years pass, which is the beauty and power of it. So good to be here. So thank you, and blessing and joy for me to be with you as well, too, on this holy and sacred night. So it's a fact that one could say millions of things about Christmas. In fact, over the centuries, millions of things have been said. As we pile on top of this simple story, all these interpretations and thoughts and gestures and traditions, it's Christmas sort of labors under the weight of it all. And it's an interesting sort of contrast to think about all that is said about the holiday and all the interpretation in contrast to what the Bible itself, the scriptures, actually say by way of description of the event of the birth of Christ. There's actually not much in the pages about it. It's a very, very small little story in the entire grand story of the Lord Jesus. So in Mark's case, he doesn't mention it at all. John has his own kind of approach to it, different. We hear that tomorrow morning in the gospel. And Matthew and Luke do mention it as a historical piece of the narrative, but even there, not much is said. Luke is who we're with tonight. And in Luke's case, there's really only one verse that kind of gets right down to the event, just one little verse, actually, that just describes the fact that God is born. One verse, really, if you get the heart of it anyway. But that one verse is worth unpacking a smidge, which we'll do tonight a little bit, because in it is contained, I would say, the essence of what it is that God does on Christmas, what he did and does still today, what it is that he took to himself, how he entered our human condition in a very important way, and how he enters into the very difficult spaces of our lives and our deaths in a very important and significant and saving way, too. So the one little verse has a lot of stuff in it that has vast implications. So it doesn't take much, I guess you could say, because the one verse carries the whole thing, you might say. So we'll unpack it a little bit and ask ourselves the question, how does it show that God saves us then and now? So the verse I have in mind, the verse in question, the kernel of it, we just read it a bit ago and it's famous. It's Luke chapter 2, verse 7. She wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. There you go. It's on millions of Christmas cards. You all know it. She wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. Now, everyone's going to unpack that little bit to explain just what this says about the profound beauty and power of Christmas. I might offer a bit of a retranslation of this verse just slightly to a little better wording of it that's perhaps a little more literal. So the whole swaddling clothes thing has to be dislodged from our heads because you don't know what that is probably, do you, right? What are swaddling clothes? They are what you wrapped little kids in until the 1700s to keep them from moving. They thought it made you grow better and it helped you from not moving around in the crib or whatnot, so to swaddle was a verb. You swaddle a baby, right? Here's a better way to read this. She, the Blessed Mother, wrapped him in bands of old rags. That's true. Wrapped him in bands of old rags and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the place where travelers lodged. That's a little more literal way to read it. And it's important, the distinction. I will get to why in a second. Why? Consider for a second that in being wrapped in old rags and placed in a manger because there was no room for them where travelers lodge, in that chunk of text right there, God shows that he moves into the most difficult spaces of our lives because the understanding is that he can't save us unless he enters into those hard spots of our lives. That's why this is so important. How do I mean that? So in one way, right, one of just say three ways that we can unpack this verse and its literal details. If you are a person who is tearing a probably blanket or rags into strips to wrap around the newborn baby, if you are having to look for a place in someone's backyard to give birth because everything else is full, if you are in that status, that tells us that you're an itinerant person, you're a traveler, you have no status, you have no money, You are on the margins in the invisible borders of society. You're a person who doesn't have the ability in the earthly sense to influence anybody, and you're caught up in the things that are outside of your control. Things are, at least at first glance, acting upon you. So the Lord, the God the Most High, the mighty, unseen, universal, powerful God, becomes in this moment someone who is simply a person with no status whatsoever. And in so doing, he assumes the position of most of humanity. Most of the world, then and now, lives in poverty, lives without power, lives without real influence, and is subject to the shifting tides of what happens around them. Things come and they go, there are things that act upon them, and they are sort of powerless to stop any of it. They're just caught up in the moment of humanity. That is the Lord in this situation here. He lets himself be a person on the edges of the world, blends in, disappears, no power, it seems, at least at first glance. In that way, he enters into the human condition, does he not? I think a lot of us these days, I hear it especially from people, you know, you and others who comment about the rising sense in your hearts that we often caught up as people in all these forces that are just too big for us to control, things that act upon us, things like economics and governments and things on social media and all these social currents. And there's this increasing idea that each of us as persons is powerless over so much of it, that we're controlled by something else that's so much bigger than us, some sort of a grand conspiracy, if you will. Whatever it is, we are people who are in many ways very powerless in our sentiments about life. So in this little scene in Bethlehem, God the Most High enters into that space with us as another average person caught up on the waves of the world, so it seems at first glance, like I say, and becomes a person like us without a lot of power to do anything. He is small, he's poor, he's invisible. Wrapped in old rags, placed in a feeding trough, that's what a manger is, because there's no place for them where travelers lodged. More on this, another angle to it to kind of dig a little deeper. Like I said, swaddling clothes, right? So this meant that these strips of cloth, these old rags, as the better translation would have been wrapped around the baby Jesus to constrict his movement. That means his arms and his legs, they were kind of put next to his body, and he was wrapped up almost like a mummy, be very, very similar, so he couldn't move at all. So this is really fascinating, right? This is God the Most High, the maker of the heavens and the earth, the mighty, powerful, vast God who lets himself be put in a position where somebody else ties him up, and he can't even move his arms and his little legs. Such a small little creature wrapped up in bands of rags. God lets that happen to him. You might say it's something of a metaphor, or not even for the reality of what happens when he becomes man. He places himself within the limitations of all that wraps us tight and holds us bound. What is it that swaddles us? What is it that wraps us up? What are the old rags that are tied around us lots of the time? Anxiety, fear, worries, all the stuff in life that is hard and difficult. It's like so many rags wrapped around us, and we feel them on us tighter and tighter and tighter. This is the mood of the world these days. And not only anxiety and worry, but also sin. Human sin, poor choices, our past, all the wreckage of the things that get dragged along with us in life, all these things pile up and there are regrets and everything else. It's like so many rags wrapped around us so that we cannot break free. It's very constricting. What does God do? He enters into that space and says, wherever you are in the world, in humanity, in that place of constriction, I am there with you. I enter into it. You're not alone in it. I join myself to that space that is so hard and so challenging. I'm right there, wrapped up myself, God says. I'm not afraid to go there with you, and I stay there with you in it. And one last piece, the third angle, again, on this simple verse in Luke's Gospel, Luke 2, 7. And to get this last piece of it, one must need some context, another sort of a retranslation. Mind you, that mangers in Palestine back then were not made out of wood. This is our Christmas card image of it, but the fact is they were often chiseled out of stone, because you had stone everywhere. There's no wood over there. There's stone, though, in abundance. So she wrapped him in strips of rags, and laid them in a stone manger because there was no room for them where travelers lodge. Luke, when he tells his grand gospel story, it's in two parts, Luke and Acts the Apostles, he wrote them both, has a way of weaving together very big parts of the story, different pieces into little connections across the entire narrative to make some connections for us, to tell us just who Jesus is all the way through. And when one understands this little rhythm, this little movement of wrapped in rags, placed in a stone manger where there's no room in the place where travelers lodged, one makes something of a connection to another verse that dangles way at the end of the story, way after this chapter. It is in the 23rd chapter, 23, verse 53, and the verse goes like this. It's about Joseph of Arimathea, and it's on Good Friday. What does it say? Joseph wrapped him, as in the body of Jesus, in a linen cloth, placed him in a stone tomb in which no one had yet been laid. There's the parallel. Wrapped him in a stone tomb, no one, as in no room, had been placed there yet. So the thing of it is, Luke wants us to understand that this little scene here in Bethlehem is a rehearsal for the day of his death. The Blessed Mother was there at this point, wrapping her son in the rags, and one day she would wash Joseph of Arimathea, wrap her son again in the cloth, place him in a stone dwelling, like the manger, this time the tomb, and in this place, in this case, the no one is, it's a new tomb where no one had yet been laid. So what this means is that he enters, the Lord does, into our mortality. He enters into death. The baby is born so that he can become like one of us, even in our death. And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, we have these powerless senses about life. We're often anxious, but the worst thing of all is death, is it not? We just can't escape it. We can try and try and try and push and push and push and have all these medical advancements and all these particular cures, and they're amazing and they're great, but at the end of the day, you just can't escape dying. It's the one thing we cannot break through. So God says, I know. I'll come and be with you even in that too. I will even enter into your death, and I'll sit in that space with you. The one thing you fear the most, I'll occupy it, that space with you, my people. So all that in this little verse, right? Now, this is the part where you all say to me, Father Nathan, this is so depressing. You've ruined Christmas. I'm going to go home and medicate myself on the Hallmark Channel until midnight. Fine. It's what I do. But the thing of it is, hear me out. If one is a Christian in the early days or even to today, one understands something, that life is hard. It's not easy. It's not the Hallmark Channel. Okay, reality is grittier, tougher, harder, much more difficult, and there's things around us that are just hard, and they are challenging. So the first Christians found such joy in Christmas, not because of all the emotional sentimentality around it, although I guess that's fine, but it kind of comes and goes. They landed on the truth that in this verse they realized that in this child they found their ticket out of all the mess. He was the one way out of it. He is the one way out of it. Because it means so much to us to realize that our God is not distant. He can save us from all these hard things, the powerlessness, the anxiety, and death, because he went into them himself. He wasn't afraid of any of it. So this is what they understood and what we understand too. Christmas has an enduring, joyful power because we know that his birth saves us from the worst stuff of life. He sits in that space with us and he busts it open for us. Because the thing of it is, the birth of the Lord Jesus always is linked to his death and his resurrection. They're a pair. They go together as a unit. And he is our ticket out of all this stuff. How does it happen? We're not powerless on the tides of humanity if we know that God's got a plan. And there's a plan written all over this story. A believer trusts in God's plan. It frees us from the anxiety about the tides of the world because God's in charge of history. He frees us from anxiety and sin because why? He has mercy in us, washes away sin, breaks the bonds that tie us down with our past, and we live at the gospel law, freeing us from evil and from sin. A person living the gospel has no need to fear. So we're free from anxiety by his teachings and by his grace. And death, that's the easy one. Easter Sunday breaks over the inside out. So he has broken death's power, this child. So we have nothing to fear from death, nothing. It's just the step to the next life that he offers to all of us. So in him is all the power. In him is all the power to fix it all of it. So friends, you know, on Christmas, I think what the church invites us to do every single year, and every generation is different, but it's really the same problem every single year, it is to realize that we have these difficulties, life's hard, and the church invites us to reach out our hand and grasp the tiny hand of the manger, the stone manger, grasp his hand and realize that in so doing, the child has all the power. The child has all the power. All the power to break all that binds us, to smash open whatever holds us bound, every single thing that constricts us, he blows it open because he sits with it, in us with it, and he destroys it from inside out. So Christmas means, take me by the hand, he says to us, and share in my power. Share my power over all that is dark, evil, scary, and hard, even death itself. Share my power, and you too can break it open from the inside out. That's the enduring power of Christmas, that nothing, nothing, nothing can rob or take away or steal from us ever, because the truth endures through every generation. So that's great. That's gold, that's pay dirt. Let's take his outstretched hand, the little child, and realize that in humility he has rescued us, redeemed us and set us free, and invite us to walk with him in the glory of the risen life, which he opens to all of us who are his friends and his sons and his daughters. Merry Christmas to one and to all.